At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
A warmer friendly hello, welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Cuts Heaps with myself, Greg Heaps Spears, and now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast, and got a great podcast for you. It's in the second segment. We do a great thing over here at VEASAN with our family of podcasts where we've got all these city casts. Today we welcome on the gentleman that does the one for the great city of Denver, Colorado, Holden Kushner. He also does great work with Rumpier Sports and Rumpier Bets as well. In the second segment, we're going to be chatting with him about these final four games. He's going to offer a little bit of in-game betting strategy as well when it comes to the final four, so you want to be on the lookout for that. And well, we've got five games left in the college basketball season. There's not a ton of games left to bet on, so we're going to give you some friendly advice for getting prepared for the upcoming season. And if you're looking to bet on other sports as well, maybe getting a few cracks in there as well. And also going to be lending advice as to not place 15-unit whale plays, because 15-unit whale plays do not ever end up very good. So we're going to be having a nice wide-ranging chat with Holden in the second segment. In the final segment, saw a lot of college basketball transfer news. I'm going to be diving into who all wound up entering in the transfer portal, some of the guys that wound up entering into the NBA draft as well, give you a little bit of a news roundup there, and then give you guys picks and analysis for this college basketball Thursday, the NIT final, as we had some bank shots. And always love to be able to answer your Twitter questions on this podcast. If you got one or two ways, we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at GUnit_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM. Name does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Really didn't get in too many questions today, so I'm going to take this opportunity to just give you a few minutes to give you the spiel that I always do when it comes to big games, because Final Four is coming up. I gave this same sort of spiel when I was on VEASAN for the Super Bowl. Just because the games are bigger, just because the games are winding down, this doesn't mean that if you wind up having a one-hour game card in college basketball on a Saturday, that on this Final Four Saturday, that you need to have the same amount of money out there as you would on that typical college basketball Saturday. Some of you guys are higher volume players, some of you guys are lower volume players. So if you're someone that you're a higher volume guy, you wind up placing one unit on like 25 bets on a college basketball Saturday, you don't need to have 25 units on the Final Four this week because you're used to having 25 units down. Keep your bet size appropriate. And with that said, if anything, I would actually encourage you guys to scale down your unit size rather than put it up, because these are the sharpest lines of the season. Bookmakers are not missing anything when it comes to this Kansas versus Villanova game, when it comes to Duke, North Carolina. They are getting as much handle as humanly possible, much like you're going to find with the Super Bowl, much like for you folks that love baseball. And the Baseball Betting Podcast with Greg Peterson is going to be coming back within days. Have no fear there. I also do baseball, so I've got you guys covered with that regard. The Baseball Betting Podcast with Greg Peterson, a very good listen, but for those of you guys that like baseball, the World Series, those lines are sharper than what you're going to be finding between the LA Angels and the Tampa Bay Rays on a Monday and Thursday. Much like with regards to the college basketball Final Four, lines for these games a little bit more sharp than Houston Baptist and McNeese State in the dead of January. It just is what it is. Bookmakers are not missing anything with this. That doesn't mean that if you like something that you have to steer away from it. You're also going to be noticing that a lot of places are going to offer more player props. And if you see something you like, absolutely take it. Make a nice little small appropriate bet. Try to make a couple bucks there. Nothing wrong with that. With that said, just because you're used to having 25 bets on a college basketball Saturday doesn't mean that you need to force up 15 player props that you are just putting up for the sake of putting them up. If you're someone that you don't do a lot of player props, you don't have a good feel for them, don't feel like you absolutely have to bet them as well. So that is just my little bit of advice there. Just because their games are bigger doesn't mean that your bet size needs to be bigger. Always keep that in mind and always try to do that. There's going to be college basketball games and plenty of them when it comes to the winter time. Many of you guys, I know, wind up betting on the NFL, college football, the NBA and NHL playoffs are coming about. I do baseball personally, so there's a lot of avenues to be able to make some money. And hey, if you're someone that you only focus on college basketball, nothing wrong with that either. There's going to be plenty of opportunities to make money in November, December, January, February, March, and into early April as well. And there's still a couple games this season as well. So don't feel like because this is the last few games of the college basketball season that this is the last few days for your current bankroll and you need to go all in. Please do not. So just my little bit of a spiel there. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that with Olin Kushner. We're going to be looking at these final four games and also offer a little bit of friendly off-season advice as well. He does a great job as a member of the VSiN Family Podcast. And this is Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. So going to have that chat with Olin coming up on the other side. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Craig Epsteers, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And it is great to be joined by our guest as this man does the Denver CityCast that is with Bet Rivers and over here with the VSiN Family Podcast as well. He also does great work over there at Run Pure Sports and Run Pure Bets as we've got Holden Kushner holding it down out there in the great state of Colorado. And to be able to follow Holden on Twitter, that is at Holden Radio all together. And that's an E-N on the end of Holden. And Holden, it's great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Oh, you're always coming to my pod. I mean, what am I going to do? Say no to the great Greg Peterson? Are you kidding me? Come on, man. You're grinding NIT. Anybody that was grinding the NIT is good enough for me. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. And hey, you know what? We've got the college basketball classic that's going to be going down between Coastal Carolina and Fresno State as well. So
settle down, Peterson. Settle down. You brought me on for the Final Four. You take care of the NIT on your own time, my friend.
I have no fear. Final segment, we will be taking care of the NIT, the College Basketball Classic. Unfortunately, we don't have anything else. If they bring back the Vegas 16 at some point, which wound up being the Vegas 8 a couple of years ago, well, we'll be able to take care of that as well. But obviously, you're a gentleman that you know a little bit about the Kansas program. Right now, on your Twitter feed, you're header picture is of the Kansas Jayhawks. So you're a man that you know a little bit about this program, and I think that's going to be really interesting to see what we wind up seeing on Saturday with this Kansas versus Villanova game, because we've seen a little bit of a line move. This opens up Kansas being a 3.5-point favorite. I'll tell you right now, I wound up taking a 3.5 on Kansas personally because I thought it was going to be the best number that we were going to get, and looks like that is going to be the case. As right now, we're finding this number at 4.5. I ultimately think that Kansas is going to be able to get the job done. I am just very curious as to the gameplay in this one, because we saw Villanova last year without Colin Gillespie. They slowed things down to a crawl. Now they're without Justin Moore. I think that they're going to do the exact same thing. I'm very curious to see how Kansas winds up going up against a team that they're going to be, no doubt, looking to control the tempo and looking to make this thing as slow and just as horrible to watch as humanly possible.
Yeah. So a couple things on this. First of all, I'm about 75% of my handle goes into live betting. So I do bet some pre-games, but I think as far as the side in this game, Greg, I'm definitely going to be betting this live because I think at some point in time, Nova is going to get themselves a 5 or 6 point lead, maybe a 4 point lead. And I'm going to be able to get Kansas pretty close to a pick 'em. Okay. That's the first way I'm going to attack this thing. And I am on Kansas too. I like Kansas as well, and you got a great number at 3.5. The thing I really like here, and I'm looking forward to your thoughts too, because you know I think very highly of you, is the total. So the second this thing came out, I said, I bet you that this total is probably somewhere around 130. And it popped up at 133. So I hit it at 133, and I said, you know what? Let me get back in this thing. Let's go at 132.5. And I'll probably end up betting one side or the other once the game starts with the total. But I'll tell you why. And you brought up the pace here. And listen, how old are you, Peterson? I think my freshman year at Kansas was longer than you've been alive. You're not even 30 yet, are you?
I'm 29. Turned 29 a few days ago.
So thanks for making me feel super old. Actually, right when you were born was my freshman year at Kansas, 92-93. Went to the Final Four, by the way. And by the 96 season, I was doing Kansas play-by-play for the college radio station. So this team is in my blood, my friend. And I feel like I've got a pretty good read on them. This is a team that does love to run. There's no question. But you'll also notice, I mean, they went through the Big 12 schedule. In the Big 12, Villanova would have fit perfectly in the Big 12. As you know, they like to beat the people and slow it down. So you see a lot of 67, 64s. I kind of look at this game and I say, this is Kansas Providence part two. This is a Kansas team that's going to score in the upper 60s. Villanova will probably get into the low 60s. If I was betting this pregame, I would say it was minus 4.5 to Kansas. But Kansas could just play either way. Sure, they would love to run and put up 85 points against Villanova. I don't think it's going to be possible. I also think Jay Wright is a better in-game coach than Bill Self. Although whatever Self said at halftime in that last game against Miami, whatever he said worked, and it worked really well. But I see these two teams beating each other. Very, very physical game, and a game that goes to the under.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I wound up saying my total at a 130.5. You were thinking that it would be closer to 130. So we're pretty much in lockstep with regards to the total. And I think that that's something that is key when it comes to live betting, as we do have Holden Kushner joining me on the podcast. There are times in which you're going to have a little bit of a read when it comes to in-game betting. And let's say that Kansas winds up getting out to a 10-0 run. You're probably going to have a little bit of a different approach there. You want to have a little bit of a game plan going in. You don't want to just have it be haphazard. But at the same time, you want to be taking a look at what you're seeing. And the best thing you could do, in my opinion, is sort of have a game plan going in. If you wind up having something go the complete opposite, maybe do a little bit of a reversal and be open to being valuable with regards to it, because you wind up taking this a little bit pregame with regards to the under, because we both think that this is going to be very slow. There might not be an opportunity to be able to take a live under if this winds up being just really bad in the first half. But at the same time, I do think that it's one of those cases in which if you do wind up seeing what you want to see with Villanova getting up a few points early, boom, you wind up getting your perfect number. If you don't, you have to have the mindset of don't feel bad if you wind up not being able to take it in game as well.
Yes, that's the big thing, Greg. You know this. Have a game plan when you're betting live. Don't just go in and say, oh, I feel like this is going to happen now. If you don't go in with a game plan, there's a lot of guys that do, but you're betting on feel. And I think there is some feel to live betting, especially with a team that you know really well. Like, I feel like I know the Jayhawks. I think it's okay to bet on feel, but you better go in with a game plan too. So if you're going in and you say, well, I think Villanova is going to win, you're getting 4.5 points. If you feel like it's going to be that close, go for it. But at some point in time, Kansas is going to lead this game. There's no way Villanova is going to wire to wire. There's no way Kansas is going to wire to wire. I don't see that happening. Very, very small chance that happens. So at some point in time, you're going to get a better number in game. There is, again, the strategy. You've got to go in knowing which side you want to bet. And the other thing is you got to be okay with just completely fading. I don't remember what game it was in the Sweet 16, but I mean, I'm all jacked up about this game. I'm so excited about it. And I'm waiting and it's halftime. And usually by halftime, I'll have the bet. And I didn't get the bet at halftime. And with about 4 minutes left, I said, you know what? I just sweated this whole game and I didn't have a bet down. Better than losing money, I'll tell you that much, Peterson. So go in and don't feel like you have to make a bet just because you've invested time and emotions in this game. Don't feel like you have to make a bet.
Yep, absolutely. When it comes to in-game betting, sometimes, you know what? Losing zero is a whole heck of a lot better than losing your one unit, your two units, whatever you wind up going with there. So I do think that that is such good advice and something that's a little bit different than what I wind up giving out, because typically I'm more of a side and total pre-flop guy. So good to be able to get that advice as well, as we do have Holden Kushner joining me right here on the podcast. And Holden, when it comes to the other game as well, it's going to be North Carolina versus Duke. No fans or buts about it. The folks over there in Indianapolis, Indiana are very happy about this one because ratings are going to be a bonanza for this game. With that said, when it comes to a betting perspective, right now we're finding Duke as a 4-point favorite, total at 151 in most spots, seeing a couple straight 151.5. When it comes to the spread, I wound up saying mine at 4. We saw North Carolina at 4.5 a little bit earlier in the week. I think that it winds up getting back there. So if you have yet to take a 4.5 plus and you like North Carolina, I would say stay patient there. But when it comes to this one, how do you wind up taking a look at it? Because right now, what I really like, once again, much like we were talking about in Villanova versus Kansas, is the under, just because we see it when it comes to these games that are played in football stadiums that are converted for basketball, hockey arenas that are converted for basketball. Shooter's eye is just way off, and offenses just in neutral courts in general seem to go down.
All right, so I put a half a unit on the over, so you and I can debate that.
All right.
And what I'm going to do also, just in case this game doesn't go bananas, the reason why I didn't put the other half a unit down, because I think there is a decent chance we get a better number, that these two teams feel each other out early. But the over's hit in six straight games. You've watched these games. I've watched these games. These teams know each other better than anybody else knows them in the country. They all know each other. A lot of them can't stand each other. Some of them like each other. There's a couple things that stand out to me. First of all, Hubert Davis's first, you know, head coaching gig in the Final Four. The guy's played in NBA Finals. I don't know how much that's really going to affect him. So I'm hearing a lot about that. I'm not too worried about it. Does the coaching edge go to Krzyzewski? Yes, of course it does. How big of an advantage is it? I don't know. I'm not really going to throw that into the handicap here. What I do know is that you've got the fastest paced team remaining in the tournament in North Carolina and a Duke team that's going up and down and that's shooting almost 54% from the field. So I'm with you that there could be some issues in the dome with the backdrop. But with that being said, I love the pace. I love the history. Usually I'm not a guy that's going to look back and say, oh, last six games went over, so let's auto bet that. No, I dug into it a little bit more. I like the pace. These two teams are just going to beat the heck out of each other, hopefully behind the three-point line. I'm in the over, my friend. You and I are on different sides. So are you taking the under because of the dome, or are there other factors?
The dome is a little bit of a part of it. But on top of that, if Duke winds up missing their first shot, which I think that jump shooting is going to be a little bit down, North Carolina in a road and neutral court environment, second best in the country with regards to defensive rebound rate. Opponents only get a second chance on right around 19% of their misses. And this is not necessarily the traditional Duke team that looks to gun it. They're right around 190th in raw possessions per game. And I do think that when you wind up getting into these bigger games, you wind up getting into this sort of stage, you are going to notice that the tempo winds up slowing down a little bit more. So I do think that it's a little bit of a case of, yeah, it is a little bit of an unfamiliar environment, unlike the games that these two teams have been playing with regards to regular season games at Cameron Indoor along Chapel Hill. And on top of that as well, I do think that North Carolina is going to do a good job of not allowing second chances. And I take a look at the way that Armando Bacot is playing as well, him being solid down low. I think that that does give North Carolina a little bit of an edge as well, because if the jump shots aren't falling for North Carolina, you do have a guy down low that is able to give you 2 points, not necessarily three. And I do think that North Carolina, as a result, going to look down low a little bit more. And I can see Duke doing the same, because Mark Williams, in his own right, is a good post presence.
I hear you. North Carolina's got some big dudes down there. I like Manic too. By the way, how about the former Oklahoma players shining in the NCAA tournament? Kind of cool to see that from some McGusty, and you got Manic, right? But yeah, you and I will just be on different sides of this. Again, they get together. There's so much energy. There's so much pace. And yeah, maybe it slows down a tick. But do I think both this game ends up in the 80s? Not with both teams, but it wouldn't shock me to see the winner scoring in the mid-80s in this game. I'm over on it pregame, and again, hoping it comes out a little bit slow and maybe hit it somewhere in the mid-140s. Then it picks up.
I think it's going to be fascinating to see what we wind up getting, because the last time games were in New Orleans, not a single team in that Final Four wound up scoring in the 70s. That was the year which you wound up having Anthony Davis on Kentucky. And as we know, that was a Kentucky team that they hung their hat on defense just a little bit when they had Anthony Davis in the fold. His offense wasn't quite what we've seen in the NBA to this point.
Just real quick, because you were going back and you look back at some of these games here that were in the Final Four. I mean, we had the Baylor-Houston game, right? And I think that was around, I want to say 140-something. UCLA-Gonzaga blasted through. Those guys went into the 180s. We had a Villanova-Kansas game a long time, I remember, maybe 5 years ago. That was a higher-scoring game. And then you get the games that are in the 60s. Again, I think that first game, Kansas-Villanova, low scoring, grind it out, beat each other up. Kansas comes out winning. This one, I just want to see points, pal.
It's going to be really interesting, because we have noticed that things can be very demonstrative when it comes to the Final Four. It's typically not a case in which you wind up getting things very close to the total. The Baylor versus Houston game that you mentioned from last year, that was an exception in which you wound up having the walk-ons actually push that total over in that Final Four game. But typically, you either wind up getting a snail of a game or you wind up getting both of these teams coming out straight fire. So I think that that is going to be a lot of fun to take a look at. And Holden, I know that you're a man that you have a lot of fun taking a look at things with regards to the offseason as well. We've got, frankly, five college basketball games left for the season. The NIT final, the College Basketball Classic final, then obviously you've got the Final Four and then the National Championship. So not a lot of opportunities here. I talked about it in the first segment, just because the games are bigger doesn't mean that your bet size needs to be bigger. Just because the end of the season is coming doesn't mean that you need to try to blaster your entire bankroll to either double up or wind up going for broke. And I do think that preparation is really important. You do this when it comes to the NFL. You do this when it comes to Major League Baseball, college basketball, list goes on and on. What advice would you wind up giving to just someone listening out there that maybe college basketball is their forte? Now they're going to be in a little bit of an off season, because I do think that the preparation off season is very important. So that way, even though you're maybe not betting as much day to day, you're still staying active. And when the season winds up coming back around, because every single year it does wind up coming back around, that it can be a profitable one.
I got a little different way of attacking this, because if you're just a college basketball bettor and you're not going into any other sports, first of all, you should definitely temper your bankroll. That's the first thing. Okay. Don't throw full units on sports you don't know. Second of all, I think tailing is an art. Okay. Everybody that I know tails, guys over at Rumpier Bets, we tail each other. You're silly if you don't. If some of the best bettors in the world have a play and they feel strongly about it, or a guy is on a run, maybe he's not a great bettor, but you say, hey, this is three straight, this is four straight. All right, let's go hop on board for a week and see how far he can take us. I think that's ways to do it, but don't just look at the spreadsheet, at the play sheet, and say, okay, I'm going to take all his plays today and I'm just going to throw them down and I'm going to bet them. Because what can happen there, and I've known people, I've gotten emails about this. They say, well, you guys suck. You know, this is, I'm not going to bet anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, you don't want to take a small sample size of someone's work, blind tail them, and then all of a sudden you throw it away and miss out on an opportunity to make money. Greg, you know this better than anybody, or as well as anybody. You just did a whole college basketball season. I don't know what your record was. I'm going to say it's somewhere around 350 wins, maybe 290 losses. In those 290 losses, there were probably a couple of weeks where you just stunk up the joint. And if somebody tailed you, then they're going, oh, you know, this guy is not good to tail it. No, that's absolutely not. You just caught the guy at his worst moment. He's also going to go through months where he's absolutely on a tear. The other thing, when you're looking at these games, let's say your favorite handicapper or a handicapper you're interested in tailing has five games. Well, there's two ways of doing it. A, you can just put them in your sports book on your app or wherever. If you're going up to a counter, sure, you can go and tail those. My advice to you would be, though, go do your own research. Maybe Greg has five plays, and of those five plays, you already went in and said, man, I'm on these two. Greg's on these two, too. Let's go tail Greg on these. But if you're just blind tailing, there's a shot that you're tailing just on an off week, and you're going to get frustrated. So I think just because you're tailing someone doesn't mean you should blind tail. You should do your own research. And the other thing is, don't take 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys and just start throwing it. Pare it down. One guy, two guys, three guys. Really take your time, work through the process, come up with your own bets. See if the guys that you trust have the same bets. If you trust a guy 100%, he's on fire, fine. Take his five bets, put it in, tail him that way. Do your own research. And don't tail too many people. If you see a sheet with 20 guys on it, don't play all the plays. Just don't do it. If you see a sheet where there's one or two guys and you've been following them, or maybe they're at different places. Maybe they're not at VSiN. Maybe they're not at my site at Rumpier Bets. Maybe they're somewhere else. Just don't make it too tough where you're tailing so many people. Narrow it down to a couple of guys and do your own research. Or ladies too. There's a lot of ladies in the business doing well as well.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. And just for transparency's sake, going into Tuesday with regards to the NIT plays, record over there at VSiN, I do five plays every single day. Just take a look at marquee games, what I like with regards to overnight numbers. So things that wind up moving around after the podcast winds up getting posted up. Yep. So current numbers, 351, 305, and 14. So right in that neighborhood.
What was it again? Say it again. I want to see how close I was.
351, 305, and 14.
Oh, well, that's congratulations. You had a good season.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, it's just one of those things in which I'm right there with you. Don't be like, oh, Team X wound up losing in triple overtime on a half quarter. Guy wound up laying 1 point with the team that lost on the half quarter. This guy has no idea what he's doing whatsoever. How did you not handicap the half court shot? I mean, that makes you just laugh every single time. And it's like, what am I supposed to do here? So I'm right there with you. And there are a lot of good people that do great work in the industry. And when it comes to sports betting as well, don't overreact / underreact to 1 or 2 weeks. Everyone is going to get super hot. Everyone's going to get super cold. It's what you wind up doing in the middle. Josh Showers, someone that does great work over with our baseball coverage over at VSiN, he always says when it comes to starting pitchers in the MLB, you're going to have 5 starts in which you are just completely on fire. You've got everything going on. You've got 5 starts where you are at your absolute worst. You cannot find the strike zone to save your life. The good pitchers are based on what they wind up doing in those starts in between there, and they find a way to be able to be consistent throughout the starts of which are not their best 5 and their worst 5. And I think that that's true with sports betting as well, because I mean, there are just going to be some games in which you wind up nailing it. There are going to be some games in which you wind up completely missing out on. I think the big thing is just being consistent, not forcing up action where you don't need to force up action, not having like 15 unit banger plays in sports in which you don't wind up knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, let me say this. That's the other thing I've noticed a lot in this business, and you're going to see a lot on social media too. My favorite play today, my whale play, is -455 money line. Okay. Good luck being positive CLV throughout the year, betting massive, massive favorites. Stop it. You're trying to look smart when you're looking absolutely stupid. It's a whale play. And the other one, yeah, let's put 10 units on this one. 10 unit whale play. Why? Okay, if you've been successful betting this way for years, then you have a system. But the other guy that's been betting for the last year and he's still trying to learn, I highly recommend that you do not have 1 unit plays, 5 unit plays, 10 unit plays, because the 10 unit plays, after a while, you're probably not going to hit on the majority of them. Or if you do hit on the majority of them, you're getting very lucky, and long term, you're screwed.
Yep, I am right there with you, my friend. And boy, oh boy, it is one of those things that it does make me laugh every single time. And don't just take a look at the record being like, oh, he's hitting at 60%. If you're laying -$3 on all of these plays, that's actually not good. Meanwhile, the guy that might be hitting 50% in baseball, for instance, but they're all on plus money plays, that's all it is. Well, look at units, not just the raw record itself right as well. So I think that that is something that needs to be stated. And something else we've got to state is that, Holden, you do absolutely amazing work yourself. I mentioned it, the Denver City Cast, that is part of the VSiN family of podcasts. You do terrific work over there. Run Peer Sports, Run Peer Bets. You do a great job holding it down there as well. So let the good people at home know they're able to follow you on social media and just everything that you've got going on.
Yep. Hit me up on Twitter. That's the best way to get me. If you ever want to contact me, just hit me up at Holden Radio, H-O-L-D-E-N Radio, at Holden Radio. Holden Kushner, K-U-S-H-N-E-R, on Instagram. And then, yeah, if you get a shot, I talk a lot of Denver sports because it is the Denver City Cast presented by Bet Rivers. First of all, a lot of bets. If you're into just betting, sure, they're Denver teams. But like today, we had a lot going on. We took the Nuggets to win the division at plus 200. Sure, it's a long shot, but we're getting 2-1 on it. We took Jokic at plus 650 to win the MVP. That worked out pretty well. We just bet the Broncos over 10 wins. I don't want to give away, you know, all of these. But the other thing is, if your favorite team or a team you're thinking about betting on, maybe you're thinking about betting on the Nuggets. Maybe you're thinking, or you were thinking about betting on CSU hoops, because I had a great season with the Rams. Unfortunately, Mount West stunk up the joint. But if you're thinking about betting on a Denver team, check the podcast out. Maybe one of your teams is taking, or a game you're interested in has a Denver team that is playing in it, check the podcast out. Or, you know, I'm just a nice guy, so check the podcast out. Denver City Cast presented by Bet Rivers. And also check my stuff out at runpeersports.com, runpeerbets.com.
Hey, and if you were taking overs in Northern Colorado games, you were making a lot of money there as well, because you know as well as I do, they were doing a great job on offense, and boy, were they playing no defense whatsoever, which those are always fun games to watch. It's always fun to be able to hit a bunch of overs, and I know that you were doing quite a bit of that.
You know what the problem was, Greg? The announcers Like, it is so tough watching some of those games. The announcers are so bad. So you just turn the volume down and watch another game. Like, I don't think I listened to one UNC game this year. Not North Carolina, Northern Colorado. Like, those small schools, the announcers are just awful. So there was no audio. It was just me picking up what I saw on TV.
When it comes to ESPN Plus, it is certainly a roll of the dice when it comes to those broadcasters. Yep. It is a little bit unfortunate. Not everyone could be Holden Kushner. Who joined me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. He does absolutely amazing work with the Denver City Cast, Run Pure Sports, Run Pure Bets. List goes on and on. He's absolutely amazing. Deliver great content here today. And coming up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, we're going to be taking a look at everything that we wound up getting in the transfer portal in college basketball on Wednesday, and then fix an analysis on the NIT final as we hit some bank shots. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Spears, and now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. It is a pleasure to get Holden Kushner on the podcast. I believe this is the first time he's joined me on this podcast. He does absolutely terrific work with the Denver City Cast. You're able to catch him filling in quite a bit on the VEASAN Bet Center as well. Guy is all over the place. Guy does a lot with regards to daily fantasy sports as well. So a wealth of information. Currently, his profile picture is of the good old Rock Chalk Kansas Jayhawks. He's over there with Run Pure Sports and Run Pure Bets as well. So great to be able to get him aboard. And now it is that time of the podcast that I give you a little bit of a roundup as to all the news and notes that we wound up seeing in college basketball on Wednesday. And we did wind up seeing quite a few coaching hires, quite a few guys enter in the transfer portal, and a few guys declare for the NBA draft. So we'll hit those first before we get to the picks and analysis. First piece of news that is actually involving a coach, and that'd be the fact that Shaheen Holloway, he winds up shoring up his deal with Seton Hall. It's a 6-year deal, and this was completely expected. St. Peter's, as we know, they wound up having that big run in the NCAA tournament. And even without that run, Holloway, who used to actually play at Seton Hall, probably was going to be getting the job anyway. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is big for Seton Hall. This is big for Shaheen Holloway. I think that he's going to have a lot of success. Got to expect that he's going to be hitting the portal fast and hard along with the recruiting trail here in the next few weeks. Nothing but the best to him. Nothing but the best to St. Peter's. But that means that the Peacock's job is now available. We wound up seeing a lot of guard movement when it came to what we wound up getting in college basketball on Wednesday as well. Mark Sears, in my opinion, might be the most notable guy that is on the move. He last year at Ohio was an all-MAC performer. He had 19.5 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists per contest. He came in for Jason Preston, and he wasn't quite as good of a facilitator as Jason Preston, but a guy that was able to shoot it very well from 3-point range, making right around 40% of his threes. So that, no question, was absolutely massive for an Ohio team that he thought was going to take a little bit of a step down from what they wound up doing, winning a game in the NCAA tournament during the 2020-21 season. And they inevitably did a little bit, but he was able to do a solid job. Whoever winds up being able to get him out there in the transfer portal, they're going to be getting a relatively solid player. D. Barnes decided that he is going to be entering in the transfer portal as well. Began his career at Mount St. Mary's, just never wound up getting playing time over there at Southern Utah. In 2 years at Southern Utah, wound up averaging right in the neighborhood about 4 points per contest. Guy that is able to give you a little bit of outside shooting. During his sophomore year at Southern Utah, shot right around 33% from 3-point range this year, more like 27% from distance. Just could never really find his footing. So going to be interesting to see if he actually plays at the D1 level or not. I think that this is going to be an intriguing transfer as well, as Arkansas, the rich just keep on getting richer. They've got 3 McDonald's All-Americans coming in. And now they've got Trayvon Brazil, who's going to be coming in from Missouri. And a lot of people are raving that he's a little bit of a late bloomer. I know that Sam Vecenie was mentioning this. He was a starter at Missouri this last year. 6.5 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks per contest. So a good low post player, a guy that at 6'9", took a couple threes, shot 33% from distance. A little bit of a raw player, but if he's able to get solid coaching, which we know that when you look at solid coaching, Eric Musselman towards the top of the list, that is going to be very beneficial to him. Brian Washington, who wound up doing like nothing at Cal State Bakersfield, right around 2 rebounds per game for them this last year, a native of lovely Las Vegas, he has decided to enter into the transfer portal as well. Going to be interesting to see where Pierre Cockrell is going to be going, as he wound up playing at Pacific this last year. Pacific was the worst cover team in all of college basketball, but didn't necessarily do a terrible job at the point guard spot. A little bit more of a pass-first guy, a little bit more more of a defense-oriented guy. Did wind up having 10 points per game two seasons ago this last year. 6.5 points, 4.3 assists to right around 2 turnovers per contest. Shot 37.5% from three. Very small sample size with his three-point shooting, but a guy that's able to dish out the ball, a guy that's able to give you solid defense, got to feel like there's going to be quite a few folks that are going to be lining up wanting his services, a guy that is able to do a good job of being able to dish it out. Colin McRae, he is going to be one of the bigger players out there on the transfer portal, figuratively and literally. 7'1", 275-pound gentleman who held it down for UC Riverside this past year. Wound up missing the 2020-21 season, came back very strong this year, 10.5 points, 8 rebounds. A guy that's able to dish it out as well. It's 7'1", 2.5 assists per contest, so he is going to be very much wanted in the transfer portal. If he winds up going to a Power 5, got to feel like he's going to be a little bit more of a defensive stopper for whatever team he'd wind up going to. If he winds up going to a mid-major, he should be able to just absolutely tear it up. Going to be interesting to see if D'Angelo Epps is able to tear it up as well. Gentleman that began his career at College of Charleston this last year at Hampton wound up being pretty much a part-time starter for the team, wound up chipping in their 6.5 points per contest. Got to feel like he wound up leaving Hampton because Hampton became a two-man team last season. You wound up having two guys that wound up averaging double figures, and then you wound up having darn near nothing else, as you wound up having Najee Garvin along with Russell Dean combining for 30 points per contest. Marquise Goodwin was the only other player on the team that wound up averaging more than 6.5 points per contest. I would not be surprised if we wind up seeing more players transfer away from Hampton, so he has decided that he is going to be leaving. We've seen a gentleman from Utah decide that he is going to be going down to a little bit of a lower level. Riley Benton, he wound up spending the last 4 years at Utah and wound up seeing a career 80 starts at Utah, so it's not like this guy is some sort of a bum or anything like that. This last year, wound up having his lowest scoring year of his career, 4.5 points, right around 3 boards per game. A guy that in his first 3 years on campus shot right in the pocket of about 34.5% from 3-point range, only about 28% from 3 this year. 6'9" combo player is going to be going to Cal Baptist. The Lancers, I believe, are going to be eligible now for the NCAA tournament moving forward because they're a team that they were transitioning from D2 to D1, and if Cal Baptist is able to bring back some of these guys from the backcourt, because you've got Taron Armstrong was a freshman this year, Ty Roll, Trey Armstrong, all these guys were able to average north of 10 points per contest, a relatively high octane offense. This is a team that they've got something going on, so I do like what you're able to get there. Kobe Dixon, he was relatively versatile while playing for Cornell this last season. He has decided that he's going to be going to an HBCU, and Howard has done a good job in the transfer portal in recent years. He's going to be committing there. A 6'9" gentleman that, while he was at Cornell this year, averaged 6 points, 4.5 boards, 2.5 assists, a block per contest, so very versatile, well-rounded player, a 32% career three-point shooter as well. He's going to be able to tear it up out there in the MEAC, so that is going to be very solid for both Mr. Dixon, along with what you're going to be getting with Howard as well. We wound up seeing another gentleman decide to transfer out of the Ivy League, and I think that we're going to see more of this as well, because when it comes to the Ivy League, they don't wind up awarding medical redshirts. I think that there are some of these programs that they did allow for an extra year due to COVID-19, but you've got Jalen Ganey, who has decided that he's going to be going to Florida State. I don't know how much run he's going to get at Florida State, but as we know, Seminoles, they typically have a very deep rotation, so you've got to feel like he's going to be a little bit of a cog for them. Gentleman that was able to give you 9.5 points, 7 rebounds per game while at Brown this last season. Not a versatile player, but guy that's able to give you 2 blocks per game. 6'9", 220-pound gentleman that should be able to see a couple minutes. When it comes to best big men out there with regards to the transfer portal, you wind up seeing Norchad Omier decide that he is going to enter in the transfer portal. 2-time All-Sun Belt performer, only 6'7", but this guy is an absolute dominator, and I think that he's one of the best names currently out there in the transfer portal. How about 18 points, a steal and a half, 2 blocks per contest to go along, 12.2 rebounds per game. Actually wound up being able to shoot right around 73% at the free throw line as well. A top 5 guy with regards to just total rebounds per game. He is out there in the transfer portal, so he is a name that you want to be watching out for. Whoever winds up landing him, that's going to be big for them. Missouri, we wound up seeing a little bit of a coaching change because now they are going to be having out there Dennis Gates, who wound up coaching at Cleveland State this last year, so I had to figure that there would be a couple guys transferring out of the program, and DeJuan Gordon is the latest of them. Actually spent 2 years at Kansas State before going to Missouri this past year. And at Missouri, didn't have bad numbers. You expected him to maybe make a little bit more of an impact. 8.5 points, 4 rebounds per game, shot 36.5% from three, like the only guy on the team had shot above 32% from three-point range. So now he is out there in the fold. You've got Nikolai Mosevich along with Skylar Wilson, who were both at Portland this last season. These guys really saw a lot of minutes there out there in the transfer portal. They're not really going to be making much of an impact, but I think that Caleb Burgess, who decided to transfer away from Hofstra, even though his scoring wasn't there, this is someone that I think is going to be beneficial for a UNC Asheville team that their defense was not necessarily there. With Burgess this last season at Hofstra, saw a big dip with regards to his scoring, wound up going from 8.3 points to 1.9 points per contest. And while he was a starter for Hofstra during the 2020-21 season, averaged 5.6 assists to right around 2.5 turnovers per game this last year, 2.5 assists, 0.8 turnovers per game. He was very solid on defense, just a guy that he's got no jump shot. In his 3 years at Hofstra, only shot 24% from three, but should be able to do a solid job being able to give some facilitation to a UNC Asheville team that they never really had that one true, I guess you could call it, sure-handed point guard. Trent Stephanie was able to do an okay job, but Caleb Burgess going to UNC Asheville, that should be able to help them out in Asheville. Figures to be a solid contender once again out there in the Big South this next year. Nikhil Ruti is a guy that should be a designated rebounder for someone. He's going to be transferring away from Monmouth, a guy that this last year was a starter and wound up being able to average 7.5 rebounds per game. Not a scorer, 3.1 points per contest. A guy that shot for his career 48% at the free throw line for Monmouth, but at 6'8", 225 pounds, you know what you're going to be able to get. Some solid play on the glass. You're going to be able to get some good defense. So he is out there on the transfer portal. Going to be interesting to see where he winds up going. Georgia State, they wound up going through a little bit of a coaching change, as well as they wound up having their coach and Rob Lanier decide that he was going to be taking the SMU job. So that means that you've got a little bit of a transfer with Jordan Rawls, and he's going to be going back to Happy. Began his career at Western Kentucky. This last year played at Georgia State. Only played 9 games for Georgia State, and now he's heading back to Western Kentucky in 2 years with the Hilltoppers. We've already got a sample size from 8 points, 2.2 assists. Really didn't turn the ball over a lot. Shot 33.5% from 3-point range this year at Georgia State in 9 games. Only wound up getting the team right around 5 points and 2 assists per contest, shooting 19% from 3-point range. So you tell that it wasn't a good fit. He's heading back home. So I can't blame a guy there. I think that it should be very beneficial for all parties. Ashton Miller, he has decided that he is going to be transferring away from Wagner. Wagner, a team that had quite a bit of success over there in the NAC, but you were expecting him to see more minutes after at Duquesne. He wound up actually seeing a start, wound up at Duquesne averaging right around 10 minutes per contest, went down to a lower level, and still only wound up giving Wagner right around 3.5 points and 2.5 rebounds per contest. Going to be interesting to see where he winds up landing, because this could be a candidate to go from the D1 level down to the non-D1 level. Not going to be seeing that with Ben Carlson, who decided that he is going to be leaving the Wisconsin program. A guy that was a relatively solid recruit. Many people had him rated as a 4-star recruit, played in 32 games this season for Wisconsin, just couldn't get a lot of minutes, wound up averaging 2 rebounds per game. He tried to have a little bit of versatility when he was on campus, but only shot 8.3% from 3-point range. 6'9", 220 pound gentleman that if he winds up going down to a little bit of a lower level, I think that he could tear it up. If he tries to stay out there at the Power 5, I just don't know if it's in the cards for him. Certainly not the most athletic guy in the world. That being noted by the fact that he wound up playing at Wisconsin. Myself knowing Wisconsin, I can speak from experience there. Robbie Beasley III, he was at Montana this last year. He has decided that he's going to be entering in the transfer portal. This is a guy that was a starter and a good one while he was at Montana. A guy that wound up starting every game this year, 12 points per contest. Not necessarily going to give you a lot with regards to rebounding, but took 5.5 threes per game, shot 37% from 3-point range. Actually saw a dip in his free throw shooting percentage. This year shot 82.5% after he shot 93% at the charity stripe as a freshman, a native of the state of California. You got to think that he is going to be wanted out there in the transfer portal. TK Smith has decided that he is going to be leaving the Troy Trojans, a guy that in 1 year at Troy was able to put up some okay numbers, was able to give you 4 points per contest, shot 31.5% from three, is a 6'5" combo player, so he's going to be out there in the portal. Chance Hunter, for the second straight offseason, he is going to be out there in the transfer portal. Wound up beginning his career at Long Beach State for 2 years. While he was at Long Beach State for his 2 campaigns, averaged 13.5 points per contest, shot 39% from three, despite shooting just 61% free throw line, and he just couldn't find his footing with Cal Baptist this last season. Wound up splitting time between a sixth man and a starting role, shot 44% the free throw line, despite despite shooting right around 32% from three, 7.5 points per contest. A guy that was used to having the ball in his hands a little bit more, didn't necessarily have that this year. So Cal Baptist is noticing him transfer out of the program. And like I mentioned, Riley Benton, he is now in the program for Cal Baptist. So they pick up one gentleman, they wind up losing another one. I always have a tough time saying this one, so we're going to do our best. Blondo Chungkogo, who wound up being at New Hampshire this last season. Very funky name and had some very good numbers this last year. Was a starter for New Hampshire, was able to give the team 12 points, 5.5 boards, 4 assists per contest. He is now out there in the transfer portal. This is going to be a good get for who winds up getting him, because he did all this for a New Hampshire team that, with regards to total possessions per game, they were in the bottom 10 in all of college basketball. Shot 40% from 3-point range. No question, was at a little bit of a lower level of competition, but a guy that is flat out a bucket getter. The Georgetown Hoyas, seen a little bit of an exodus when it comes to some of these guys transferring out of the program. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise. Tyler Beard, Jalen Billingsley, along Timothy Igahovi, have all decided that they are going to be entering into the transfer portal. Igahovi, in my opinion, is the biggest of the three because he wound up giving the team 5.5 rebounds this past season. Didn't necessarily give the team a lot of scoring. All three of these guys, Beard, Igahovi, along with Billingsley, all averaged between 2 and 3 points per contest, but Igahovi was able to give the team 15.5 minutes per contest and did wind up giving the team 20 starts as well. Beard is someone that wound up shooting right around 28% per three, was not really a fit with this team. And then Billingsley, a guy that wound up averaging right around 11 minutes per contest, shot 23% from 3-point range, 2 points per contest. None of these guys could really find their footing, so all three have decided that they are going to be entering into the transfer portal. Jordan Kwasinski from Drake, Jared Garcia, Langdon Hinton, they all entered in the transfer portal. These are guys that they just didn't wind up making much of an impact whatsoever. We'll see where they wind up going, but these are guys that you really don't need to take much note of. Jacoby Wood, I think, is intriguing from Belmont, though. Jacoby Wood wound up seeing a little bit of a drop-off with his numbers this last year after 2 seasons ago at Belmont during the 2020-21 season. Averaged 11.5 points, 2.5 assists per game, shot right around 33% for three this year. He saw his numbers cut nearly in half, 6.5 points per contest, so was able to give the team 2 assists per game and had some pretty active hands on defense, but wound up seeing a big scoring dip, a guy that was actually relatively highly touted coming out of high school. So going to be very intriguing to see where he winds up going to. This is someone that did not wind up seeing a lot of minutes while he was at Iowa, but a lot of people are raving about him. Josh Ogundele has decided that he's going to be entering in the transfer portal. Comes over from the UK. 6'10", 285-pound big man. Only wound up playing right around 5.5 minutes per contest for this Iowa team. But a guy with a big body, a guy that had a little bit of promise coming out of high school. I'm going to be intrigued to see where he winds up going, because with the right fit, especially at a little bit of a lower level, he could be able to tear it up, much like I think that Brendan Medley-Bacon, with the right fit, will be able to as well. He was at McNeese State this last year, 9.5 points, 6 rebounds per game. If you go back to what he wound up doing while he was at Coppin State during the 2019-20 season, he legitimately put up some of the best numbers for a big man in all of college basketball. That year, he had 7.5 points, 8.7 rebounds, 2 blocks per contest, but in MEAC play, averaged a double-double with over 2.5 blocks per contest. So at a low level of competition, he is able to absolutely tear it up. Just has not been able to find the right fit with VCU and McNeese State the last 2 years. You also wound up seeing Caleb Rawls decide that he is going to leave McNeese State as well, a guy that wound up doing darn near nothing. Same goes for Jonathan Lucas as well. Lucas just could not wind up getting off the bench for McNeese State, so we wound up seeing 3 gentlemen from McNeese State enter into the transfer portal on Wednesday. Taj Schmall, I think that this is a big deal, the fact that he is out there in the transfer portal, wound up hitting upon this one a few days ago, but a guy that was able to give Charleston State a mid-30s three-point shooter, a guy that was able to give you a double-figure amount of points per game. He is now in the transfer portal. DQ Nicholas, who was playing at Southeast Missouri State, he has decided that he is going to be entering in the transfer portal as well. This is someone that I think could make a little bit of an impact. Didn't necessarily tear it up while he was at Southeast Missouri State, a team that just did not pride itself on defense. His first 2 years on campus wound up seeing a bunch of starts, 46 in total. This last year, he wound up having just 5 starts. He wound up still being able to be relatively effective, 8 points, 3.5 rebounds per contest. He was able to give the team a little bit of versatility as well, 42% 3-point shooter. He is going to be out there in the transfer portal, so if he winds up going to a little bit of a lower level school, I think that he could be a starter and a good one at that. Ali, who was an all-MAC performer this last season, 6'8", 205-ish pound gentleman that was able to shoot it at a 41% clip from 3-point range for an Akron team that made the NCAA tournament. He's going to be out there, 14 points per contest, needs to work on his rebounding a little bit more. At 6'8", fewer than 3 rebounds per game, but is able to give you 2.5 assists per contest. A good stretch player now out there on the transfer portal. So going to be intriguing to see who all wants his services, because you got to feel like he's probably going to be able to go up a level. I'm going to be intrigued to see if Carter Witt is going to stay at a high level. He was playing at Wake Forest this last season. During the 2020-21 season, actually wound up getting 10 starts this last year. He wound up seeing a big dip in production. Went from 4.5 points per contest his freshman year to more like 1.7 points this last season, and a big reason why. During that 2020-21 season, when he was getting minutes, 2.7 turnovers per game. If he winds up being able to find the right fit, this is someone that has some potential at 6'4", not necessarily a great three-point shooter, but a guy that's able to dish out the ball, is able to give you some versatility, just wound up having a tough time being able to take care of the ball in general. So very intriguing to see what's going to be happening there. Wound up seeing a pair of gentlemen that wound up being good contributors for Delaware State, wind up entering in the transfer portal as well. DeMarco Bacom along with Zach Kent. Kent, whenever he was out there, was solid. 6'10" gentleman that actually wound up beginning his career at Tennessee. 5.5 points, 3 rebounds per game. Guy that's able to shoot threes, not necessarily that effective at being able to shoot threes, but able to shoot threes. He is going to be out there in the transfer portal. And then the other gentleman in Bacom is someone that wound up starting about half the year for the team. He was able to give the team 6.5 points, 4 boards, right around a steal per contest. So relatively solid glue guy there. Got to feel like with these guys being guys that wound up seeing minutes at Delaware State, they're probably not going to be going up a level or anything like that, but they are guys that they've shown that at the college level, they're able to give you a little bit of something. We wound up seeing quite a few guys wind up hitting the transfer portal from Northern Illinois, as well as you wind up seeing Trendon Ankerson, Montavious Mink, along with Chinde Kingsley Okanu wind up entering in the transfer portal. The biggest one is Hankerson, because he wound up doing a little bit of everything while he was at Northern Illinois this last year. 11.5 points, 3.5 boards, 2.5 assists, really a 3-year starter for this program. Wound up shooting 35% this last season. 2019-20 season on 3 threes per game, shot 46% from 3. These last 2 years, shot more like 36% from 3, but that's because he wound up taking 7 and 6 threes per game, respectively, these last 2 seasons. He wound up becoming a guy in which a bad shot for him was better than a good shot for a lot of his other teammates, so that wound up hurting them a little bit. And you've got a guy in Okanu, who I think could be a little bit intriguing as well. Wound up as a senior, being able to give the team 5.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game, so you've got a little bit of upside there. I do think that you've got a little bit of upside as well when it comes to Connor Cachera. Connor Cachera was one of the top scorers at a team in William & Mary, in which you wound up getting both of them. And for Cachera, I thought that he was really able to do a solid job of helping this team settle down. He was a CAA Rookie of the Year player during the 2020-21 season. And this last year, wound up seeing a little bit of a dip in production, wound up going from 13.5 points per game to more like 11 points per game, but still gave you 4.8 rebounds per game. Guy that shot right around 33% from 3 in his 2 years at William & Mary. He's a 6'5" combo player, so got to feel like he's going to be wanted out there in the transfer portal. Deshaun Holtu, I'm pretty sure, was a walk-on at Alabama, and Justice Williams, a guy that didn't wind up seeing a lot of minutes at LSU. Both of these guys are now in the transfer portal. And then Alex Caldwell, who wound up being over at NC Central this last season, he is in the transfer portal as well. Caldwell is an intriguing guy in that he wound up seeing some meaningful minutes at Southeast Missouri State a few seasons ago during the 2019-20 season as a starter. Wound up giving the team 12 points per contest, shot 75.5% at the free throw line, 34% from three-point range with 3 assists per game. Just could never find his footing with NC Central. Wound up seeing a couple starts, was utilized a little bit more of his defensive stopper. Didn't wind up shooting 38% from 3, but only 5 points per game. A guy that has shown in the past that with the ball in his hands, he's able to do some okay things. So I'm going to be intrigued to see who winds picking him up, because I think that in the right system, he could be a solid backcourt contributor along Jalen Finch. Finch wound up beginning his career at a little bit of a lower level at Florida Southwest State Community College, so a JUCO school. Last 2 years at Jacksonville State, averaged 10 points, 4.5 assists to right around 2 turnovers per contest, a 38.5% three-point shooter, and was part of a Jacksonville State team that wound up making the NCAA tournament. He is out there, so I think that that is an intriguing name that you do want to be taking note of, along with LJ Owens. Owens, 6'3", began his career at William & Mary this last year at UMBC, was able to put up some nice numbers. 11.5 points, shot right around 83% the free throw line, 43% from three-point range among just pure shooters, one of the best players now out there in the transfer portal. So very intrigued to see where he's going to be winding up ending as well. We have seen one gentleman decide where he's going to be going moving forward, and that would be Jelani Williams. He wound up playing at Penn this last season, and he is also going to be going to Howard. So We wound up seeing two gentlemen over the last 24 hours decide that they are going to be going from the Ivy League and that they are going to be going to the Bison of Howard, with Williams this last year wound up being a starter that gave the team 6 points per contest, shot only about 30% from three-point range, but chipped in their 3.5 rebounds per game, was able to chip in their 1.2 steals per contest as well, as a good frame as well, right around 6'5". You'll notice that towards the back half of the season, he was able to do some of his best work as well, if you take it from the 15th of January on, because this is someone that was a little bit banged up during the year as well. So last 9 games that he wound up playing in, 6 points, right around 4 boards per contest. 3-point shooting wound up dipping a little bit, but was able to do a better job of getting to the free throw line. So over there in Ivy League play, he was able to be a relatively solid player. You wound up seeing Malik Green towards the back half of the season while he was at Canisius, wound up seeing a dip in minutes, and looks like there was something going on behind the scenes because he has decided that he is going to be entering in the transfer portal with Green. He was an all-Metro Atlantic performer during the 2020-21 season. 13 points per game is what he averaged that season, shooting 35.5% from three-point range. And you take a look at what he wound up doing towards the early part of this year before he wound up getting banged up just before the holidays, and he was absolutely tearing it up. So from November 9th until late December, first 9 games of the season, wound up having 16 points, 7.5 boards, shot 37% from three. After that injury, he wound up pretty much being put on the shelf, and then from there, I think that he wound up being able to do a couple nice things late, as if you take a look at what he wound up doing from, we're going to call it February 14th on, so final 7 games of the season in 20 minutes per contest, 14 points, 4.5 boards, shot right around 31.5% from 3-point range. So a guy that has a lot of talent, he just wound up being utilized in not necessarily the world's greatest way. So he is entered into the transfer portal. And one of his teammates as well, Armand Harid, he is out in the transfer portal as well. And Harid was one of the top backcourt players for this team this past season. He was able to give the team 11 points, 4.5 boards, right around in assist and a half per contest, shot from 3-point range only right around 28% from distance, but was one of the better defenders for this Canisius team. So he has decided that he is going to be following Mr. Green, and he is going to be entering into the transfer portal. Wound up seeing a pair of gentlemen from Arkansas State decide, you know what, we're going to be entering in the transfer portal as well, in Manu Fatina along Keon Wesley. Wesley is the one that you want to be noting out of these two gentlemen. Wesley was a guy that was able to give you a couple solid minutes from time to time, a gentleman that was able to contribute right around 4.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game, had a solid 6'9" frame as well. So he was a main rotation player for the team, a guy that wound up seeing quite a few starts in his time at Arkansas State as well. So got to feel like someone is going to be able to utilize him. Got to feel like someone is going to be able to utilize Trayvon Fagan as well if they wind up getting him. He's transferring away from Buffalo after he wound up having 4.4 points, 4.4 boards per game, wound up being a little bit more of a, I will call him, seventh man for this Buffalo team this last season, was able to do a solid drop down low, but he clearly was not necessarily fitting in the mold of Buffalo. Buffalo very much a run it and gun it sort of team, a team that takes quite a few three-pointers. He was not a guy that necessarily did that. And then you wound up having Junior Clay as well, winding up deciding that he was going to be transferring away from Tennessee Tech, and he's going to be staying within the conference. Four-time Ohio Valley Conference performer has decided that he's going to be staying within the conference. He's going to be going at Tennessee State. He wound up being a little bit of a 50-50 split guy. Half of his time was spent as a sixth man. Half of his time was as a starter. 13 points per game this last season, shot 32% from three. 2 seasons ago during the 2020-21 season, was one of the top scorers out there in the conference. Had 17.5 points per contest, 3.7 assists, actually cut down on the turnovers this year. To his credit, a career 34.5% three-point shooter. This is going to be very beneficial to Tennessee State, so that is a big deal for them when it comes to guys that have decided, you know what, they're going to be entering in the NBA draft, and you've got a few guys that they decide to sign with an agent. You've got a few guys that decide that they are going to be weighing their options. You've got James Akinjo and Darius Days. Both of these guys are as good as gone, and you figured that would be the case for both of them. With Akinjo, he wound up having a little bit of a rough start to the year with regards to turnovers, but as the season was able to go along, he was able to do a good job of being able to settle things down, and really did a great job with Baylor. Baylor, you got to feel like he's going to be investing a lot into Kendall Brown if he winds up sticking around, and Adam Flagler as well. with regards to their backcourt. But you take a look at Akinjo, 13.5 points, 6 assists, 2 steals, 2-3 turnovers this last season. 3-point shooting wasn't necessarily there at 30%, but got to feel like he's going to be able to do a solid job at the next level, whether that be in the NBA, whether that be at the G League. Perhaps he winds up going overseas, but there certainly is a place for him in professional basketball, and same goes for Darius Days, a guy that wound up playing 4 years at LSU, a former top 100 recruit, 6'7", 245-pound gentleman that this last year at LSU, 13.5 points, 8 rebounds, shot 35% from 3. We've seen a regime change at LSU, so I think that this is best for all parties. He might not be as good of a fit with Mr. McMahon, who comes in from Murray State, but at the same time, a guy that he should be able to earn a paycheck over there in the NBA and or some other form of basketball. And then Jalen House, he's left it open as to whether or not he is going to be staying in the draft, so he is yet to sign with an agent, but this last year at New Mexico was really able to tear it up after a pair of disappointing years at Arizona State. 17 points, 4.5 assists, 2.2 steals, 3.5 turnovers per game. He's likely not a guy that would wind up getting drafted in the NBA draft, but he's got a lot of upside. Got to feel like he's probably going to test the waters. Whether or not he winds up staying in the NBA draft, that is a little bit questionable, but a guy that is going to be weighing his options. Harrison Ingram also decided that he was going to be declaring for the NBA draft. This should come as a surprise to absolutely nobody. Throughout much of the year, he was a projected first-round pick. Now, I think that he wound up burning his stock a little bit with the year that he wound up having at Samford. And it's not like it was a cataclysmically bad year, but I think that a lot of people would agree. They were expecting a little bit more from him. 10.5 points, 6.5 boards, 3 assists, a steal per game. Shot right around 31.5% from 3-point range as a 6'8 combo player. Now, I did not see if he was going to be signing with an agent or not, but with that said, you got to figure that he's probably going to be as good as gone. And Javon Freeman Liberty decided to declare for the NBA draft as well. It looks like he wound up declaring without an agent, but if he does wind up coming back to school, it's going to be somewhere other than DePaul. That's pretty much a done deal at this point. When I was at DePaul this last year, absolutely tore it up. 21.5 points, 7.5 boards, shot 37% from 3-point range, was able to chip in there right around 1.7 steals per game. He was the heart and soul of DePaul basketball. The fact that you wound up having DePaul just meltdown in so many games in which they were without him, that tells you all that you need to know about him as well. Blake Wesley and Mike Miles decided to declare for the NBA draft as well. With Mike Miles, he was the top scorer for a TCU team that we're going to call it what it is. They did not wind up having a lot of offense in 2 seasons on campus. He wound up averaging 14.5 points per contest for TCU. Also wound up playing for the, I believe it was under 19 USA team as well when it came to the summertime. This last season, a guy that's able to give you 3.5 assists per game, needs to cut down on the turnovers, but very much a plus defender as well. And then when it comes to Wesley, a guy that doesn't necessarily shoot the 3 great, but his mid-range jumper, that was absolutely superb. And a big reason why Notre Dame was able to take strides forward was his just continued growth throughout the season. With Wesley, 14.5 points, 2.5 assists, 1.3 steals. You figure that he was going to be declaring for the NBA draft. Wesley, he's going to be a first-round pick. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. So he has decided that he is going to be declaring for the draft. David Roddy is going to be declaring for the draft, but he has left the door open as to whether or not he is going to be either returning to Colorado State or if he winds up deciding, you know what, I'm going to be entering in the transfer portal. With Roddy, he was able to get rowdy this last season. Started all 31 games for Colorado State, 19 points, 7.5 boards, 3 assists, 6'5 combo player that wound shooting from 3-point range, 43.5%. One of the just most thrilling players in all of college basketball. If he winds up coming back to Colorado State is going to be a top 25 team. With that said, if he does not wind up coming back, that's going to be putting them in a world of hurt as you wind up having a Colorado State team that was not necessarily too deep. I was mentioning James Akinjo declared for the NBA draft. One of the guys that you thought that they were going to be relying upon is Kendall Brown, and well, they aren't going to be relying upon Kendall Brown because he declared for the NBA draft as well. 9.5 points, 5 boards, right around 2 assists per contest. A guy that from 3-point range shot 31.5% from 3-point range. That means that you need to hope that LJ Cryer comes back healthy because he is going to be a big cog for them. So he decided that he is going to be entering into the NBA draft as well. Now that we've taken a look at everything that we wound up getting in college basketball on Wednesday, let's give you guys picks and analysis on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at gunit_81. Simple enough, we're going to be going with the NIT game, and my DK Nation pick of 651-652 Texas A&M is going to be playing against Xavier. The X-Men find themselves in between a 4 and 4.5 point underdog, and your total in this game is 137.5. For the DK Nation article, we're going to be writing up Xavier. Xavier is pretty much between a 2 and 2.5 point bigger underdog than Washington State was just a few days ago, and I'm not sure if I could get behind that because this is a Xavier bunch. They've been able to do a solid job on offense, 72 plus points in each out of their last six contests, and honestly, I think that in watching the NIT, we can summarize that Travis Steele just had no idea what he was doing with this team, and Nate Johnson has really been able to impress me in this recent six-game stretch. He has been able to go 14 of 31 from three-point range. Xavier overall has struggled from three-point range away from home, shooting about 31%, but in a road and neutral court environment, he shoots 39.3% from three-point range, and then you just take a look at the flip side for Texas A&M. This is a team that they don't necessarily do the world's greatest job of being able to hit their shots. They're a team that they shoot right around 32-33% from three-point range. They've got a pair of guys in Henry Coleman III and Tyrese Radford that combine for 22 points. Both give you a little bit over 6 rebounds per game. And to the credit of Radford, he is able to shoot about 40% from three-point range, so he's been able to do a solid job there. But if this is a game that's relatively close, and I do think that it is going to be Texas A&M, not necessarily the team that you want closing out at the free throw line. Now, Xavier, they shoot about 70.1% from the free throw line, ironically enough. In a road and neutral court environment, they're a tad bit better at the charity stripe. Same goes for Texas A&M. They shoot 69.9% as a collective, 70.7% away from home. But last three games of this NIT, they've been shooting right around 61.5% from three-point range. I do like the way that Zach Fremantle has been able to play recently, a guy that overall for the year has only been able to give you right around 10 points, 5 or so rebounds per game, wound up being a little bit banged up, but was able to put up double figures in the win against the Bonnies of St. Bonaventure. Paul Scruggs being out of the fold certainly has been taken into account with this as well. Keep in mind that he is the gentleman that wound up fouling at the end of that Butler game, so the fact that he's out there, I mean, it does wind up hurting the backcourt a little bit, but guys like Adam Kunkel and company have been able to do a solid job. The one thing that you do fear with Xavier is turnovers, because this is a Texas A&M team that, with regards to turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, they're a top 15 team in all of college basketball, and Quentin Jackson has been able to give this Texas A&M team 14.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game, but aside from Coleman III and Tyrese Radford, you don't have a single other guy on this Texas A&M team that gives you more than 3.5 rebounds per game, so I think that Xavier has a little bit of an edge down low. Texas A&M, a offense that can be sporadic at times as well, so I do think that Xavier going to do enough to be able to hold in this game. I don't think that they win it outright, so I'm going to be playing it safe, and I'm going to wind up taking the points in this spot. And with Xavier, they've been solid on offense. Texas A&M, a team that they rank in the top half of all of college basketball in terms of possessions per game, and I think that you wind up getting a little bit of late game fouling here as well, as you've got a Texas A&M team that has gotten to at least 72 points in 3 out of their 4 games in the NIT as well. So I do want to say my total at 138.5. I'm going over, and the DK Nation pick, that is good to be Xavier getting the points, and that will wrap things up for the Thursday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VEASAN Family of Podcasts. Big thanks to Holden Kushner, doing a great job at Run Pure Sports and Run Pure Bets, coupled with the Denver CityCast over at Bet Rivers, sponsored by them, a part of the VEASAN Family of Podcasts, as well as Coast to Coast Hoops, which, if you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you've got one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letter CM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the year, not just the college basketball season, but throughout the year when we wind up getting the offseason, you're going to be getting transfer portal news, just some looks at the upcoming season, conference previews, list goes on and on. So we've got you guys covered all 365 days this year, which means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.